Well, good afternoon, everyone. And I think I should say congratulations. We've just reached the halfway point of our 9-day retreat. So my first question is, how's it going for you? Easy? Difficult? I'm sure some of you have been asking that question to yourself over these past days. So I want to share a quick story. Again, this is on this theme of opposites. This story, many of you probably have already heard it, but in the Tang Dynasty in China, there was a family named Pang or Pang, P-A-N-G, who were famous throughout the entire country because the father, the mother, and the daughter had all attained enlightenment. The story begins, and it's very short, with Layman Pang, Mrs. Pang, and their daughter Ling Chao sitting in their thatched roof cottage one day, when Layman Pang suddenly exclaimed, "Difficult, difficult, difficult," like trying to scatter 10 measures of sesame seed all over a tree. "Easy, easy, easy," said Mrs. Pang. You can tell they're married. "Just like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed in the morning." And then their daughter, Ling Chao, who, by the accounts that come down to us, was actually known to have the most insight of all of them, said, "Neither difficult nor easy. 100 tips of grass, the ancestors' meaning." 100 tips of grass. The truth, just like this. There's a famous Zen saying you also might have heard of that puts it another way. It's called a capping phrase, which I don't want to particularly get into today, but this phrase is, "Don't make anything and you get everything." This actually defines what we're talking about. As soon as we cleave the fullness of reality into this and that, we reduce our relationship to the world to this and that. And in the fallout of that simple turning reality into opposites, I'm going to use the word, if you want to look at it this way, violently cuts out the majority of the fullness that we're possibly able to experience. So if you decide something is difficult, you tend to perceive your experience through the filter of difficulty. If you look at your own experience, you may see that to be more true than you know. And on the other hand, if you decide something is easy, you can perceive it through that positive filter. Of course, our preference is to live a life at ease in the world as it is, but either approach has the effect of editing out the fullness of life. As the saying goes, if we don't make anything, we get everything. So the choice is up to you. I want to add that I think there's a tendency, certainly in our culture, you may have seen it, you may You may be aware of it. It's called toxic positivity. This is a case where rather than opening ourselves up to things that are difficult, we put the label of positivity on everything. There are many, many people who try to hold that habit of positivity, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that, of course, but if we grab onto that too tightly, we're forcing things. We're trying to fit a label, a salve, a band-aid, a tourniquet maybe, on top of the ups and downs of life. And we tend to, I think psychologists would say, we repress these negative feelings. So our practice of Zen is to be with the fullness of life, not trying to turn it into something it's not, either positively or negative. So let's jump into, if you're looking along with the poem, it's number 17. To live in the great way is neither easy nor difficult. Then Seng Tsang goes on to say, but those with limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. This is an interesting line. When we operate within the reactivity of our conditioned mind, the quality that we talked about a second ago, about being at ease in the world, vanishes. We're reminded that the world doesn't always bend to our will. So we second guess ourselves, and we become anxious. This goes back to that line of when we have limited views, turning everything to only this and that, we become fearful and irresolute. So as we encounter bumps in the road, we hold on to our ideas more, even more tightly, grit our teeth, and rush over rough spots as fast as we can. We've all done this. This is the point where our attachment to ideas can turn into clinging. Clinging is the point, if you're aware of Buddha's teachings, or especially the 12-link chain of dependent origination, this is a fulcrum where some of the natural things we tend to think about and become attached to, which is human, solidifies, calcifies. Maybe encasing us rigidly into this. We hang on tight, we grit our teeth, and we just try to go as fast as we can. This is this state of mind where we have aversion to what's in front of us. This aversion can lead us to either simply distract ourselves or escape from what we think of as a bad situation. These forms of escape are well known, and I think we've touched on them before. You know, escape through sexual misconduct, extreme focus on amassing great wealth, becoming famous, whether it's in our mind, in our family, in our community, or in the world at large, and we see this on all levels, and on, mass consumption can be a form of escape, and it's rampant. All of these things have been rampant since time immemorial. By the way, You might think of clinging as chronically hanging on to our attachments despite the great suffering they cause. Sengsan says this, clinging cannot be limited. Even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. Sooner or later, this unchecked attachment to any idea can turn into clinging. And for us, especially, the idea of enlightenment. Enlightenment is held in such esteem for Buddhist practitioners, and it has been since the very, since Buddha began teaching. It's held in such esteem that we can become especially susceptible to this dream of enlightenment. So for those of us who've practiced for a number of years and haven't had an awakening experience, we can feel like abject failures, can't we? We can feel less than. We can feel like all of the time we've spent training in Zen and putting in those hours on the cushion have been an absolute waste of time. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. For those of us who have had some kind of notable opening experience, we run the danger of appropriating it as a shiny, new, perfect identity. A whole new, more perfect me. This is known as having the stink of Zen. It sounds funny, but it really is apt. Sometimes these experiences can be so profound that we just habitually want to have it be the shiny top layer of our idea about ourselves, and make sure those around us also have that same opinion of us. And Zen Master Sungsan's warning about this that has come down to us, I think, is really helpful in those cases. Again, for those of us who haven't had that experience, we maybe dream about it and through force of will try to bring it on. But it can be just as problematic or more so if we're stuck there. I talked about that the other day. In the next lines, Sengsan offers this antidote. Just let things be in their own way, and there will be neither coming nor going. This phrase, coming and going, again, is another pair of opposites. And we can take that lightly as just another pair of opposites that he's scattered the poem with. I think we maybe could also think of it as this coming and going of identity. I'm going to cast off this identity, the dark, embarrassing, shameful parts or the hurtful parts that I just wish would go away. And the arrival of this new me. But again, he says, just let things, let me get back to the quote. Just let things be in their own way, and there will be neither coming nor going. What we're doing again in the Taoist sense that we visited earlier is following the natural unfolding of nature. This is the great influence that Taoism has had on Zen. Everything in its own time. Don't try to force things. So activity and inactivity neither contains any kind of passivity, knowing when the time will come, can be thought of as an active, intentional non-action, I guess I would say. He follows along by saying, obey the nature of things, and you will walk freely and undisturbed. When thought is in bondage, the truth is hidden, for everything is murky and unclear. Here, Tseng Tsong offers us two paths, a stark choice: follow nature's way and walk with freedom and ease, or follow your thoughts, which includes that big metaphoric bag that we carry around with us, filled with unexamined beliefs, habitual karmic reactions, opinions which we mistake for reality, ideas that the ego must always be go in one direction and no go in one direction only, and on and on. Obeying the nature of things means living in harmony with Buddha's insights into interbeing and impermanence, going back to Buddha's two truths. On the other hand, when thoughts are in bondage, these insights are considered and we're out of step with reality. So can we be in concert with nature? As lay practitioners, most of us are all too familiar with both of these paths. And as lay practitioners, I think we're all aware that we need to function in the relative world, in the everyday world. We have to conceptualize. We have to be able to communicate within the limitations of our language, which reinforces this idea of separating things into this, that, this, and that. For many of us, our livelihood is dependent on being able to analyze and evaluate things as being worth pursuing and not worth pursuing. And also, as lay practitioners, we need to fully honor the absolute aspect of our being as well. I remember when I took five precepts from my teacher Zen Master Jibong many years ago. After the ceremony, every one of us who took precepts, the initial five precepts, had a private meeting with Zen Master Jibong, one by one. And I remember him saying, now, Eric, you have taken five precepts and your direction is clear. You are on the Zen path and you can always find your way. I said, wow, I don't feel very clear a lot of the time. And he laughed and said, of course, but your direction is clear. Your direction is clear. And the path you're on is clear. So you can always find your way. He also said, you know, you can also wander off the path for a while. This happens to a lot of people. But this path is always available to us and we can always come back. To use Tseng Tsong's words, when everything is murky and unclear, even when the path is murky and unclear, it's always available to us. We need to believe that. It's a very important point to remember. Before I read the last lines we address in today's talk, I want you to remember what it was like the very first time you tried to meditate. For so many of us, the initial experience is one of being absolutely shocked by how frenetic the mind can be. It's only when we stop our running around, sit down on a cushion, and just try to be present, especially in a retreat setting or a practice setting where everything is relatively quiet, we see the busyness of our mind in stark relief. We probably decided to try meditation because we were looking for some release and relief from that constant busyness, that constant confusion. But once we find a way to tame this mind that is usually called monkey mind because it's jumping around, making a lot of noise, and doesn't want to settle down, we can get a glimpse of this still place beneath all the craziness. And again, that quite often might just be a little gap, in our stream of thinking where we can experience for ourselves. And, you know, probably most of us go, oh, yeah, I get it now. And we're right back in thinking. So more practice for all of us is always necessary. And as we continue to practice, we know for ourselves, just by getting that glimpse, that this calm, quiet center is always available to us beneath the frenetic mind, between the busyness of our lives, between the anxiety and beneath the stress. With this in mind, you might recognize the value of Tsengtsong's next lines, and these are the final lines we're going to talk about today. He says, the burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. What benefit can be derived from distinctions and separation? Here's an advocate for oneness, if ever there was one. But for us, it's interesting to notice that Tsengtsong refers to residing in our egocentric small self as annoying, wearisome, and burdensome. We can relate to this, right? We're exhausted so much of the time. When we see it in that light, we might be encouraged to let go of at least some of that extra baggage that we carry on our backs and turn our attention to that still place deep in our center. So let go of your striving to get somewhere, or at least loosen it a little bit to achieve something. Let go of that need to constantly achieve. In fact, as we continue sitting through this retreat, try sitting for absolutely no purpose. Keep no purpose in mind. And you just might find yourself simply experiencing the eternal flowering of this moment. Thank you.